I think that for me is like, man, we are a team. We look out for each other. We support each other. We really changed the world here by thinking, you know, it's really easy in organizations like schools and churches, you know, public type organizations, that it's easy to protect your people. Do you know what I mean? Like, you do a lot of things, just, I'm going to protect you from this situation. And we really changed that to be, you know what? I'm not going to protect you from this anymore. I'm going to support you through it. That really changed the mentality of how we go about our business on a day-to-day basis. And I really watched our admin team hold on to that and not afraid to do some hard things anymore.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my guest today is Greg Eading. Greg is the superintendent at Lakeshore Public Schools in Stephensville, Michigan. Greg, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. You were telling me it's cold there. Really cold.
It is. Yeah. We're in Southwest Michigan, and a lot of the schools just north of us closed today because of snow and ice conditions. We did not, because our temperature is about 38, so not really icing on the roads today.
That's good. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Lakeshore Public and a little bit about you, how you got into and how long you've been a superintendent.
Sure. Lakeshore Public Schools is, we have about 3,000 students overall, five buildings, one high school, a middle school, and three elementaries. It's kind of a rural / suburban area. We have quite a few kids who come from like the farm kind of country area. But then we also have some built up subdivisions in our area too. Southwest Michigan, we do get a lot of traffic in the summertime from the Chicago area, and doubles this whole population in this area, I would say. It's really busy around here in the summertime, but right now in the wintertime, it's kind of nice.
Is that tourism? Because you're right on the
tourism
lake.
Tourism and second homes that people have. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Trying to get out of the hustle and bustle of the insanity that is Chicago. And
we're right on Lake Michigan, so it's a beautiful area, and people like to travel and vacation here. So.
Lake Michigan is absolutely a gorgeous lake. Lake.
People have never been here. I tell you, it's like an ocean. Like freshwater ocean. Yeah.
Without salt, right? Unsalted. Yeah. It's unsalted. Yes, I love that about Michigan. They use that term. Everything's unsalted. Love it. Because I'm on the water here in Texas, but it's definitely salted.
Yes.
Salt. They call it salt life, right? They call it down here. We call it salt life. So
yes, that's right. The salt life, and this is the
This is the unsalted life. Yes. There you go. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So so tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you become a superintendent? And a little bit about you.
Yeah, I I'm grew up with a dad who was a teacher and a farmer. I grew up on a farm, kind of a farming community of Hamilton, Michigan, which is about an hour north of where I live right now. About the age of my seventh grade year, I got really interested in wanting to be a math teacher my seventh grade year, because I had an excellent math teacher who was kind of shifted my brain from thinking that math was about just adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing to, it's about problem solving. You know, and that changed the way I think about how education works and how I think about how I could be a teacher at that point. Went on to Hope College, which is right in Holland, and became a math major there, computer science minor, and then went into teaching. And I taught actually in my hometown of Hamilton for about 8 years, and decided I wanted to take a look at expanding my world a little bit at that time. I think for me, I would call it almost a calling to say that there's a little bit more to do. And it really wasn't just turning my crank anymore at that point, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to do something different, and landed a assistant principal role in the charter school up in Grand Rapids area. Did that for 4 years, and then became a principal in the Zeeland Public Schools. I was a middle school and high school principal there for 17 years total.
Oh, wow.
So really hit my majority of my career was in administration, middle school and high school, secondary education area. And that experience kind of brought me into this feeling of, you know, what does the end of your career look like? What is your impact in this world going to be? What do you want to accomplish, you know, as a, as an educator, as a leader? And thought really long and hard about the superintendency. I had a lot of people talking to me about that as an idea. Also had a lot of people. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
Is it in Michigan? Is it like, so I know you have to have a specific certification to be a, is it different to be a superintendent versus a principal? Like, did you have to go? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And I, and that's kind of one of the reasons, you know, Zealand allowed me to pursue that. They had in their contract, they had the ability for me to go through classes and I could get, you know, they would pay for those classes,
gotcha. Okay.
Which was nice. And really, I think it's the same certification for central office position as it would be for superintendency. So whether I moved up into a role out of a building and into a, you know, director type role, or I became a superintendent, it didn't necessarily matter as far as my certification goes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I know, and it's different and every state's different. So I was just curious.
It is.
Yeah.
You're right. A lot of times I've learned that really you need another 30 credits beyond your master's in most states to move into those roles, which is what.
So you might as well get your PhD, right? At that point, it's like, that's why a lot of superintendents have their PhD. It's like, if you're going to do that much, right? Yeah.
Yep.
As an SLP, for me, it never made sense. I wasn't on the research side. It makes a lot of sense to get your PhD, but if you're in clinical, it doesn't make sense.
I got my 30 credits in, and it's called an educational specialist degree. So it's kind of a halfway point between your master's and your doctorate.
Okay.
And then we had my daughter ended up getting diagnosed with a brain tumor back then, her freshman year in high school. And I just decided to hit the pause button on my career advancement at that point in time and said, hey, I think we're just going to hunker down as a family. She's fine, by the way.
Oh, praise God.
Turned out fine. But at that time, it wasn't.
No,
like it was
that's scary stuff.
You know?
Yeah, that's scary stuff. Yeah. It seems like you navigate scary stuff really well. From what I know about you and the conversation I've had with you, you are really good. You are very level when it comes to crises. And you've been at, you said Lakeshore, you've been there, is it 5 years now? Is that what you told me?
Yeah, this is my fifth year here.
Okay, So talk to us a little bit about that. How do you, because you never know what you don't know, and you never know what's coming, and you've had your share. So talk to somebody who's considering or in that place where maybe they're going to be a superintendent. Maybe they're thinking, think about you 5 to 6 years ago, 8 years ago or whatever. What kind of advice and what would you say about that?
Sure. I think it's a lot of it starts with your tendencies in how you navigate your normal life too. I mean, I think that I like to really try and treat each situation that comes up with the level of intensity that you kind of need to, and not overblown intensity. So like if my staff, when I was a high school principal, if my staff saw me running somewhere, they in their brain should click on something's big is happening, you know, where if I'm walking, you know, quickly somewhere, that's a little different, or if I'm just kind of meandering to someplace, that's different. So, so I think in the more that you just take those situations in, try and slow people down a little bit, try and slow yourself down a little bit to get from your, you know, fight or flight mode into that thinking mode. I think as a leader in a space, when you do that, it generally lends to everybody else doing the same thing. So I think my tendency has always been to try and slow things down. And it's not necessarily that I think I'm doing it any better than anybody else. It's just a matter of, you know, I really want to try to provide people level-headedness as they're hitting their head against a situation that could be pretty powerful, you know. Here, it's been interesting. I had a really interesting situation happen a few years ago. It was 2023, And the pandemic was pretty much over by then. We as a district were in the middle of a campaign to raise bond funds to have our local area families vote for a referendum, like a millage, to increase tax money here, which is a lot of work, by the way.
Yeah. And
then in the middle of that, we had a staff member who had been in the district for over 20 some years, basically turn himself in for a sexual thing against a student, but the student happened to be his daughter. And so navigating the PR nightmare that it was a student of ours and a teacher of ours, but it wasn't necessarily a student-teacher relationship. It was a father and his adoptive daughter relationship that he is now in prison for. But yeah, that was tricky. And, you know, the learning out of those situations is that I think information's the key, being as transparent as you possibly can without crossing the boundaries of legality is kind of where you want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And then really trying to provide people the sense that, you know, we're dealing with this situation professionally.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with the situation in a way that keeps kids first, all kids first.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to throw stuff under the rug to make people think that we're covering something up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you rely on a lot of professional help to do that. I mean, we had an attorney that worked with us. We had a PR firm that worked with us. And they were excellent people that I already have pushed other districts towards using similar situations. And yeah, that was tricky.
Yeah.
Very tricky.
Yeah. So I don't need the details anymore beyond that, but where I just think about the how once it comes out, you know, that something like that comes out, then the rumor mill grows crazy. I don't think there's any way you can stop a rumor mill. And so what did you guys do? What kinds of steps? You know, I guess that's what I'm asking for is like, what were you advised to do in a situation like that to, I just can't even imagine. I'm just sitting here going, wow. Yeah.
And truthfully, I think it sounds so cliche, but I think the learning I've had out of those situations is you have to always work your hardest to do the right thing.
Mm, okay.
And that sounds, like I said, sounds cliche, but it's really easy to circle the wagons up and it's easy to throw people under the bus.
Mm. Play the blame game.
It's easy
game,
to,
right?
You know, in my world at that point in time, I had a staff member who we wanted to, first step number one was to have that person not employed in our district anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's step number one. Step number two is ensuring, I say step number one is ensuring that our student, his daughter is safe,
mm-hmm.
that his other kids are safe, and that mm-hmm. his wife is safe. Step number two is to separate from employment.
Mm-hmm.
Step number three is to figure out what the authorities need from us and provide them whatever information and help we can provide.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out whatever our kiddo needs from us through therapy or counseling or, you know, that long road that she's going to be on for a long time. She was 16 at the time when she came out, and she had been abused since she was 3, I believe. So,
that's lifetime trauma. That's a lifetime of trauma. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can understand that I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing anything or saying anything that could cause him to get off mm-hmm. on the situation.
Yeah. technicalities and such. Yeah.
So we were very careful. Every single thing that we put out, we had vetted by our attorney to make sure we weren't crossing any FERPA laws or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. And it, you know, that's just what you have to do those things, or you are going to put, you might feel easier to do at the time because you just want to roast them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You
want
to roast them in front of everybody. But as soon as you do that, you're causing a lot of potential hassle for a prosecuting attorney.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's so, yeah, our knee-jerk reaction is to just take care of it, you know?
Yeah. I think there was a moment in time in that story where enough water got under the bridge, we'll call it a week or two into that, where I was able to get my attorney to allow me to say the words, yes, this was a staff member of ours, and yes, this was a student of ours, but this was not a staff student situation.
Right.
And as soon as I could say that, and get my attorney to okay that, I think that changed a few thought processes from people.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz that's the public relations piece of it is you had a staff member abuse a student. That's probably all that anybody heard, and you've got to clarify that and get ahead of that too, right?
Right. And that was really quite helpful. And yeah, I can't, I mean, at the end of the day, those were like dog years. I mean, it felt like that, you know, three months of time felt like 3 years of time, basically, you know.
Now, did it end up becoming, you know, I think about national news, you know, we had the issue recently with the superintendent who was not even a U.S. citizen in Iowa. And I remember when my kids were in high school, there were issues but it was a staff student thing, and you know, and they handled it extremely well. I mean, I love that school, and my kids all graduated from Leslie High School, and it was they handled it well. It was a situation like that, and you go, oh, you know, how do you gain back that trust, or you know, when people. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember what they did that made me believe that it wasn't going to happen to my child, but I was very comfortable and confident with my kids. But did it become a national thing for you guys? Like, did it go that far?
No, it did not. It didn't make it into like the more regional area. It wasn't just like our local newspaper or anything. It was South Bend kind of news area.
Okay.
And then it did not get picked up past that.
Okay.
You know? And truthfully, I think a lot of it's because there wasn't a whole lot anybody could say, because you're still talking about a student. You know what I mean? And schools can't talk about kids, you know?
There is a crisis in this country, a massive shortage of special education teachers. We know how devastating this can be for your students, families, and staff. Lighthouse Therapy places experienced special education teachers in virtual, hybrid, and on-site roles, and we handle everything from hiring to onboarding to mentorship. These aren't just placements, they're professionals who understand compliance, collaboration, and care. Let us help you fill in the gaps with special education teachers who really understand. We are here to help. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to connect with us today.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And we got to take first and foremost, take care of those kids, right?
Yeah.
It's the most important part. Yeah. So what has it been like after? Like how did you handle the staff? You know, because you could say, please don't talk about it. Please don't do this. Please make sure that, you know, how did you, because you've got to do some professional development and some crisis management with them. How did you handle that?
Yeah, this was an elementary teacher of ours, which also makes a lot of parents think, what about my kid, right? That was part of the issue back then. And the staff, this was a revered staff member. This is somebody who did a lot of really good things in the district as far as community building. And I mean, he was well-loved by his fellow staff members. And so the tricky part was my staff, the staff here, had all kinds of weird feelings of like, how, like, again, his daughter was a student that went to that school at one point. She was not the easiest of kids to handle at that school. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the teachers were just angry as far as thinking we as a district were throwing him under the bus right away. They didn't necessarily know that he had confessed to us, mm-hmm. right? And we can't tell them that because right. that's all part of a police investigation situation. So we just had to tell our staff, like, it probably took about 9 months or so, at least the rest of that school year and the next school year starting, for that staff to like be able to have a conversation with us. Mm-hmm. I remember going into that staff, and I visit with my staffs quite often, but I was in that staff at a staff meeting at the end of that school year, and it wasn't necessarily a positive feeling. And then again, the following fall, and I could feel like, okay, this is a staff that's healing, mm-hmm. and isn't angry anymore. You know, everyone goes through those phases that
yeah.
we get through, those grief type phases. Right. And I think for me, watching that staff go through that was, you really just have to take a few bullets and listen and try and love on them and tell them that's not their fault necessarily, you know, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
that they just did the things during those times that they thought they were doing. They didn't realize like the student was acting out because she was wanting somebody to pay attention to her, mm-hmm. you know? I think hindsight there is obviously 20/20, but
yeah. Well, and you can't know everything. You can't, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We're not God. Yeah. We're not omnipresent. We're not omniscient. We're not. And yeah. that's the reality of it. We serve the kids as best we can with
yeah.
what we know.
We brought the Child Advocacy Center into that building in our district and did a little bit more work through that, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a hard one. Super hard. Still's hard. I mean, those are situations where, you know, there's so many kids that have had that teacher over the years and so many parents whose kids had that teacher and so many staff members that worked with that teacher. And, you know, that's why, you know, when we take hiring of teachers seriously, those are the reasons why, because such an impact on the world for those people, you know?
Yeah. A long term. Yeah. yeah. And it makes you go, you know, all the things he was doing, maybe that was out of guilt. I don't know. I mean, that's just me. That's me speculating.
No, I know.
yeah. You just go, what makes people tick? Yeah. What makes people tick? You don't know. You don't know why do people do what they do? I don't know. I've asked that question multiple times. Sometimes I say that to myself, why do I do what I do? Not yeah. anything to that level, but you know, it's like sometimes yeah. it's just, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. So that, I mean, if you look back on my world as a superintendent, like there's no classes that you take that help you manage those things, you know? I think yeah. you learn a little bit by listening to people who you trust. You rely on your attorney and PR firm people that are excellent at what they do. You just listen to what they have to tell you. If you have another idea, I remember I had a few ideas through that. We held a Facebook Live event in the middle of that situation that I did some Q&A with, people kind of like this actually, but
mm-hmm.
I kind of read a statement off that and then was able to do some back and forth question and answer, and that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But those are, I mean, and the attorney was like, if you're willing to do that, okay, but just be careful.
yeah, right. Yeah. Make sure you don't do these things. Yeah. And
yeah.
that's really good advice. You know, it's like we want to do what we think is emotionally right at the time, and yet sometimes that is the worst thing that we can do is react. Yeah. And those are things that could chase a administration and a superintendent off. So
sure.
kudos to you for fighting for your team, fighting for your staff, and working through it. Because I could see people cut and run. I mean, you're talking 23, you're only 3 years into your superintendency, right? So
yeah.
So God bless you for sticking it out for those kids.
Thank you. Well, and then we passed our bond, which was great, like in the middle of that. And yeah, those are all big things. That was the, that was a big bond because it was, we had just failed two in a row. So, before I came in, we had failed a couple and then we passed one. That was the first one we passed in 10 years. So that was big. Yeah.
Yeah. So good for you. So tell me some positive things. We said that was a tough one. Yeah. Let's talk about some of your wins.
Oh, you know, I think the biggest win I've had is, I work with some incredible people. And I've had the chance to, I have a group of 15 people on our administrative team. Mm-hmm. And I've hired 9 of the 15 into their positions. And I think that for me is like, man, we are a team. We look out for each other. We support each other. We really changed the world here by thinking, you know, it's really easy in organizations like schools and churches, you know, public type organizations, that it's easy to protect your people. You know what I mean? Like you do a lot of things, just, I'm going to protect you from this situation. And we really changed that to be, you know what, I'm not going to protect you from this anymore. I'm going to support you through it. That really changed the mentality of how we go about our business on a day-to-day basis. And I really watched our admin team hold on to that and not afraid to do some hard things anymore. You know, we tackle staffing issues. We don't just let things go. You know, we try to do the right thing on a consistent basis. And sometimes that means having tough conversations with people. That doesn't sound fun, but that's really, when you start doing that, everybody elevates their game, you know? And we really find ourselves in a climate and culture that is super positive and people can rely on each other and feel good about what they do on a day-to-day basis and focus on the needs of kids on a consistent basis rather than the needs of adults. And that's a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah. It sounds like you're an excellent leader and you're empowering your people to become the best that they can be. And that's impeccable leadership. So kudos.
Well, I appreciate
to you for that.
Yeah. Appreciate that, Janet.
Thank you. So one last question. And this is just a question that I try to ask a lot of, not all of them, but I ask it a lot. If you could, and I know money's always an issue. So we say we can't say anything about money, not money. You can't say, I wish I did too. I wish I had all of the money and never had to worry about paying anything ever again. I do. But if you could miraculously fix just one thing within your world as a superintendent and the things that you deal with and never have to deal with that thing again, what would that one thing be?
I mean, I can't say money. I would really love to see kids not have to struggle in families that are dealing with financial issues. That's one. I'd say in Michigan, I wish that the system regarding our Department of Education in Michigan would be different because I don't feel like it's a supportive environment, a supportive system. I don't feel like the state superintendent in Michigan is in a position of leadership or power because they don't really have any seat with the governor. And so they end up, the state department here ends up being like, they carry out all the orders that the legislator puts on them. So in terms of how we view the state superintendent, the Michigan Department of Education, we all feel like we don't like, they're not a group of people that we consider to be leaders in education in our state, which I think is really sad.
It all
sad.
Flows down. None of it. There's no advice. They're
yeah,
not
there's really no, like,
back.
We don't think of them as like leading the way of education in our state. We feel like we're all on our own and they are the ones just carrying out the orders of the legislator. Right.
Yeah.
So the rules that come through legislation, the henchmen for those rules is the Michigan Department of Ed. And They do all the accountability. They do all of that kind of stuff, which I'm not saying we don't need. I'm just saying that if we want to have better education in the state of Michigan, we need to have leadership at the state level for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you need a voice. You need to have you absolutely need a voice in all of that. That's one of the things in Texas that I've talked to superintendents like yourself who they're on committees that are and witnessing and testifying at the state level before that. Now that nobody ever, I've never talked to somebody who said our state does it all perfectly. I don't think there's a state out there that does it perfectly. But when you have a voice, when you feel like you have a voice and that people are listening, you know, it's like, it isn't always perfect, but at least you've got a voice. And then when you don't have a voice, that's maddening. That's got to be maddening. Yeah. So
I feel like if I had a magic wand, I would switch the way that was structured.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Great answer. Very great answer. So Greg, tell me, where do people go to learn a little bit more about Lakeshore Public Schools?
If I was going to give people a website, I'd have them go to our website, lpslancers.net. We have it's a pretty redone website over the last couple of years. It's been a great tool for us. Our strategic plan's listed on there, and we post our progress and kind of like almost like it's not charted out, but we show our progress on each of our goals on a consistent basis. We do it quarterly as an admin team and board. And you can kind of see kind of the things we're a part of. It's really easy. I like the idea of our strategic plan being three different areas. One is student success. The second is having the best people in front of our kids that we possibly can. And the third is developing more community connections with each other.
Very nice.
So, those are easy. And then we just put goals and action items within each of those every year. And it kind of moves us forward, which is pretty great.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Greg, thank you for your transparency. Thank you for your leadership. It's very clear that you are taking charge and leading in a level-headed manner, which is when you're talking about crisis, I get that you need to have a level head. So kudos to you for doing that. And
thanks, Janet. I appreciate
and thanks
that.
For just sharing. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.